I've seen the story. I read it over once or twice. I said that you say a little bit of bad advice. I've been in trouble, happened to me all my life. I lie and you lie, and who would get the sharpest knife?
You know, it shouldn't be somebody like that. Not the kind of man to throw his hat into the ring and go down without following through. The day turns into night. Go down, following through. The day turns into night. Where I came in.
I'm right out, but I'll go anywhere. Yes, I'll go anywhere with you. Time has gone, but I'll go anywhere. Yes, I'll go anywhere with you.
This is the danger zone. This is where I came in. They don't know what they do. Give them all their sins. They know they cannot take away what you have given me.
To black and white, under the bedclothes, everything will be alright. I know that you know, nothing ever stays the same. Said so, I said so, love will never speak its name.
Never gonna find somebody like you, beauty with a brain and a body too. I could never make a move on a woman that leaves me on. You got a little bit of something for everyone. It's a little too late, and the wolf is on the run.
I'm right out, but I'll go anywhere. Yes, I'll go anywhere with you.
Time has gone,
but I'll go anywhere. Yes, I'll go anywhere with you.
I always told myself I would regret this day.
This is Judy Mullen, and it's 102.5 FM, Sound Art Radio, and you are listening to the Bee Gees. Slight interruption, I believe. We're dealing with hotspots and technicals and all sorts. We're rubbing up against it, but we have a hero amongst us who is a technical genius who has brought me to your airways. Oh, my God. So, bigging it up for Mr. Martin Seeger. Thank you so much. It's a fantastic day in Devon. It really is. It is hot, 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 and we're all melting. But so get those ice cubes. Juggle with a few ice cubes is my suggestion to you. We've got a jam-packed show. And this is my message going out to Rima Staines. Get well soon. Rima was scheduled to come on at 11:20 this morning, but fortunately the norovirus has struck their household. So it is going to be the fabulous Beanie. Beanie, who's in Totnes and does all sorts of artistic endeavours. We're getting Beanie on at 11:20, but our very good wishes are being sent out to Rima and family. So let's have a bit of O Stella to keep us going, shall we? Coming on, PJ Harvey?
Stella Marie, you're my star.
Stella, coming from PJ Harvey. Welcome to your Monday on 102.5 FM. If you've just tuned in, this is Judy Mullen on The Cake Girl Show. How are you, Chris? Stella Marie. Oh, Stella. She's a good woman, that. PJ Harvey, isn't she? So we are all, yes, sizzling in Totnes. A few ice cubes down my back wouldn't go amiss, but I don't know. I can't do that, can I, if I'm broadcasting? How can I run to the fridge and get ice? It's not going to be possible. So today on the show, we have our roving reporter in the guise of Sarah Louise Connolly, who goes out various locations. And this one is Tuckenhay, I believe. Bow Creek, I think it is. So let's have something a bit, I was going to say cheesy, I don't know why. What's cheesy about wings? Nothing, right? Someone at the door? Do you want to come in? Get out of it. Let him in. Open the door, let them in. Bit of wings there, and let them in. So we're going to get Sarah Louise Connolly, who's always supported by Mark Ribollet. Actually, Tracy from the Barrel House is going to see him live tonight. Mark Ribollet. So let's see what Alistair Moffat's got to say about books. Oh, that was a bit abrupt, wasn't it? A bit abrupt. Let's see what goes on with Sarah Louise Connolly, our roving reporter. Come on, girl. Oh, she loves this.
Yeah.
Come on, Mark.
You put the coffee, you put the beans up in the grinder. You put the beans, goddammit, in the grinder. You put the beans in the grinder. You pop the beans up inside the grinder. You grind it up. And then you put a little grounds in the filter. You put the coffee down in the filter. And then you put the filter up in the top of the coffee maker. Gotta get that drip. Gotta drip, 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 a drip, a drip, a drip, drip, drip. Got to drip, a drip, a drip, drip, drip. Gotta drip, baby, drip. Then you put it in your cup.
Hello, I'm down in Stick Central today. I'm down by the shifting sands of Bow Creek, talking to the ever so dapper Alistair Moffat.
Oh, hello, Sarah. How are you?
Hello. How's my face?
Very fresh-faced, very youthful, as always.
Thank you very much. Because I've had a non-surgical facelift procedure this morning, and in 3 to 6 months, I'm going to look like a 16-year-old. That's basically what's going to happen. No, I had this most marvellous procedure at the New Wave Clinic in Paignton. Just giving a little shout out to Hannah there. She is fantastic. Check it out. Now, back to the point. Alistair.
Hello.
When you're making people laugh on Facebook, because you have a very good, dry sense of humour, you're involved in organising and promoting some of the gigs at the New Line Brewery, is that right?
That is true, yes. Yeah.
And anyone who doesn't know where that is, that's at the Meadowbrook Centre in Dartington. It's the one with the grassy knolls. That sounds a bit jerky.
It does. I mean, no one's going to get assassinated.
It's more Teletubby.
There's not been one yet. It's kind of more Teletubby, isn't it, than JFK?
And you've had some quite famous people performing there lately.
Yes. Yeah, and I've been involved in getting some good names down there, actually. I mean, just
come on, give us some names.
Off, well,
not drop some names.
Drop some. I mean, could have Bruce Springsteen, who's not played there, but we had Mike Joyce from The Smiths. For anyone that you know who was around in the '80s, remembers the famous indie band The Smiths. The drummer was down DJing not too long ago, and we also had Leticia Sedia from Stereolab.
Oh,
which
fantastic.
Was a really big, you know, big catch. For us, so that was good, and there are some more good names too.
So
to
did you meet Mike Joyce?
Yes.
Did you get overexcited?
I'm not a super fan, but I ended up being his chauffeur, his bar boy, going getting beers and lighting his cigarettes. You know, so more of a lackey role. But you've got to pay the price.
It's a good story to tell. Now, music, has it always been one of your passions?
Music, yes.
Yeah. So, what was the first album you ever bought?
Oh God, I don't know. I think one of the first albums was bought for me was. An album by a band called the Baron Knights,
which
embarrassingly is like some kind of like 70s comedy band.
Which you have to do a Google on this one.
I mean, Google it for those of you who are like in your maybe 20s or 30s, maybe even 40s, you might not remember that.
Yeah.
But they were like a comedy band that had a bit of a kind of a slightly what you might call a blue holiday camp kind of element to them, if you get the gist.
So I take it you're not listening to this on a regular basis these days.
They're slightly cancelled these days. they weren't too bad, I guess.
For a first album.
Yeah, but my brother and I used to play that to death and we used to love it. We didn't really get some of the little saucier jokes that were going on there. It just seemed like a lot of fun. They did a song about the Smurfs, which was like one of our favourite ones.
Now, another passion of yours is books.
Correct, yes. As you can see, we're surrounded by them here.
We are. We're sitting here surrounded by piles of books. And you recently gave up your very boring day job to return to what you love, which is selling books.
Selling books.
Was that scary?
A bit.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's really exciting because, you know, I'm
doing what you love.
By books, and I've been collecting books, you know, pretty much most of my life, and rare books since sort of like the mid-90s.
Oh,
wow. I've got a lot of stock around me.
Yes, already.
I sort of go between collecting and then selling and collecting and selling. So, you know, once you've got a good lot of stock around you, you can just like, you can sell off the fat and you can, you can live and pay the rent for 3 months.
Brilliant. So what is your favourite book of all time?
Probably Jack Kerouac, On the Road. I think that's the one I've read a few times. On sort of recent review of it, I think it's kind of, there are some sort of shadier elements of that. There might be, that probably when I was like 18 and I read it, it was, slightly different. But I don't know, it's got all the energy that the book really needs.
So when you're selling, do you specialise in a certain genre?
It's quite broad. You know, I cover comics, ephemera. You know, I sell, you know, vintage, you know, London Underground timetables.
Oh, right. But,
you know, and then right up to things that are sort of more high end.
And where do you find all these books? And where do you sell them?
I can't divulge information.
Oh, yes,
Sarah,
of course.
Because everybody would be doing it. And we'd be in competition.
Right. That's a top secret.
To say, you know, without revealing those sources, car boot sales and flea markets and local shops, there are still some really good
shops
around in the sort of like 30-mile vicinity that are still, you know, selling for quite good prices, some very rare items. If you've got an eye for it, if you know what you're looking for, you can go in there, you can get the gems and you can get out. So
I myself over the years have collected vintage sleaze.
Yes.
Pulp fiction from the kind of 50s, 60s and 70s. It's like sort of cozy crime with a bit of sex in it.
Correct.
And I haven't really known what I was doing at all. I haven't collected knowing what was worth any money, knowing even any writers that were particularly any good.
I
have just gone for the titles that made me chortle because I have a really silly sense of humour, and there's some brilliant innuendos in there, aren't there, that just really make me giggle. Can you remember any good titles? Is there any that stick out in your mind?
Oh god, I mean there's some of them are so basic as things like "She was born to be bad" and things like "She couldn't be good," and it's a lot of it is around sort of the expectation that women are very prone to kind of like misdeeds and that sort of thing. So it is very un-PC, but at the time it's not really now, is it?
Yeah,
but they are so funny, and you're right, some of the titles and some of the covers, you know, I've got a few here.
I was going to move on to the covers because that's the other bit that I absolutely love about them. It's the kitsch and kind of incredible covers. Are there any particular artists that you could name who did the vintage sleaze? Because like I say, I had no idea. I just, throughout my life, I've collected them when I have money and then sold them when I didn't have money, then collected them again when I have money again, and then sold them again when I didn't have money.
And the prices are sort of going up and down all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes you sell something off that's a really valuable book and you can't afford to buy it back like 5 years later. So some of the artists, I mean, there were some really incredible artists like coming off the back of the pulps in the 30s and 40s and through into the 50s, you know, artists like Rudolf Bilarski and Robert Maguire in the USA and in the UK. There's a very, very talented artist called Reginald Heed, who was very meticulous and managed
to put a lot of these
covers out. Whereas a lot of the artists were just chopping them out very, you know, quickly, and the quality was very low, but they were just getting paid.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy Heed was just putting very, very good quality paintings that you could put on your wall. They were so, you know, artistic merit. And they were gracing some of these covers, like, for example, if we can have a look over here.
Shuffle. He's having a look for a good one.
Well, he's not here. Oh, here it is. Here we go. So we've got this one here.
Oh yeah.
So this is
the sort of
stuff he's doing. And then on the back they've got another cover here, which is called Perfume Nemesis.
Yeah, brilliant. So and look at her; she's fantastic.
Is promising the reader all this kind of like, I don't know, this sort of like saucy content.
Yes.
But really, they're very, very.
They're very mild.
The artwork themselves.
Compared to today's standards of sleaze, they're really, they're really tame, aren't they?
So that's Reginald Heath, but a very, very good artist.
And so, as we were saying, some of them are actually worth quite a lot of money now,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes.
What's the most you've ever made on a book sale?
That would have to be a first edition of Junkie by William Burroughs that I bought in paperback. It came out on a paperback publisher called Ace, actually quite a well-known publisher. And I bought a copy maybe 25 years ago for, you know, really peanuts, maybe 50, 60 pounds. And then sold it, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago for, you know, way above that. You know, I don't want to be
saying what
sort of prices they were, but I mean, so it were in the thousands.
Oh, wow. You know?
That's obviously not the most valuable paperback.
But it's a really interesting world that I literally knew nothing about, to be honest. Yeah. And I've only dabbled on the outskirts chalkling at the titles. But, well, in that case, the hobnobs are on you, Alistair. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And your caffeine, which I've yet to touch because I've been rambling on too much.
We've been chatting, haven't we?
Now, back to you in the studio, Julie.
You put the coffee, you put the beans, Alistair Moffat, in the grinder. You put the beans, goddamn it, in the grinder. You put the beans in the grinder. You pop the beans up inside the grinder. You grind it up, and then you put a little grounds in a filter. You put the coffee down in the filter, and then you put the filter up in the top of the coffee maker. Gotta get that drip, gotta drip, 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 a drip, a drip, a drip, drip, drip. Got to drip, a drip, a drip, drip, drip. Gotta drip, baby, drip. Sarah Louise Connolly, you are a star, and I loved that interview. It was hysterical, and you're destined for the BBC because the way you pushed Alistair Moffat to disclose the amount that he sold his book for, you got him there to the point. He didn't actually quite name it, but we knew it's in the thousands. Ooh, that's so exciting. Thank you for being our wonderful roaming reporter. Now, Beanie has saved my bacon. You know that, don't you? You know Beanie's famous. She's downstairs. Beanie, are you coming? Seriously, she really has. She's got me a hot spot. And then our wonderful Rima Staines couldn't come on because she's poorly. So I said, this is a girl that can do anything, clearly, because I said, will you come on the show? And she said, yes. She's crazy. Let's have a little bit of Fleetwood to get us in the mood for Beanie. So, okay, let's get Beanie on the line.
Hello,
Beanie. Welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I've told everyone that you single-handedly have saved my bacon.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Or maybe because we're in Totnes, I can say save my tofu. So welcome to the programme, Beanie Murphy. And I know that you are downstairs in the Emporium of Frame Making and Art. So can you tell me a little bit about your background? How did you get into this business?
So I actually got into it because my father's a picture framer.
Uh-huh.
And he's been doing it for about 30 to 40 years.
Wow. Okay.
But I used to study art in Bristol, and I thought I was going to go into just focusing on art, but then, you know, didn't go to university and thought, what am I going to do with myself? And then my dad said, well, why don't I train you to be a picture framer? Thought I wasn't going to like it at all, but really loved it. So I had a framing shop in the Cotswolds in Tetbury. Did that for about 11 years, really enjoyed it.
Wow.
But I've just recently moved to Totnes.
Ah, welcome, Beanie, to Totnes. And how did Steve make your acquaintance? Because that was rather serendipitous, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I didn't think I'd get into a framing framing work in Totnes, because it's quite a niche sort of job.
Very much so.
And most people that frame usually do it independently themselves, and don't really employ other people.
Yeah.
But luckily, kind Steve employed me, and I've been here for about 3.5 months now.
Brilliant. Let's pedal back to actually you. You touched on the art direction that you thought about going towards. What would that have been exactly? Would that be painting or something else?
I did art BTEC and art foundation. Obviously, you can sort of specialise in different aspects of art there. And then I kind of focus more on kind of fine art, lino prints. And I just loved anything going through a press machine, all those sort of things. I was fortunate enough to study in Bristol, where they had a really beautiful building full of big press machines and lino cuts and all the rest. So that was really nice.
I bet that's kind of still calling you in the backdrop. I'm sure I bet there are some sort of particular aromas in a press. Are there kind of really heavy duty?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I only have to smell linseed oil and I'm like, woo, that's amazing. So I
think it's the machinery and the, you know, paint all over the floor. The building had such character, really inspiring.
Yeah.
But I'm fortunate enough to be a picture framer and get to see amazing artist work come through the door all the time. So I still get to be inspired in that way.
Exactly. But you never know, because I know that other people who've landed in Totnes have found themselves doing all sorts of different strands, you know, kind of following old passions, etc. So your dad taught you the ropes. How was that? You know, I would never have asked my dad to teach me to drive, because I would have done something wrong and he would, oh my God. You know, he would have gone,
he tried killing me a few times.
Really?
And the same back. But we got along really well. And he's taught me, you know, how to successfully sort of not only enjoy what you do, but run a business. So, I mean, yeah. And I think people mistake framing to being quite, you know, just four bits of wood around a piece of artwork.
Yeah.
But there's actually so much more to that. And I think that's the bit I enjoy, because I still am working around artists. And I get to sort of follow their journey, and that's really nice.
I can imagine that. And actually, what fascinates me, and I honestly know nothing about it, but I have been thinking about it lately, are the idea of molds that someone, you know, are there people out there that sort of make to a commission a mold for this piece of work, that somebody might have a kind of abstract piece of art that needs a particular colour or a particular mold? Are there people out there that do that? Have you worked with anyone like that?
Yeah, I mean, when I was working in Tetbury, I don't know whether you've ever been there before, but it's full of sort of more antique dealers and, you know, more of the... So people have closed corner frames, which are sort of more ornate and can be gilt or designed with sort of scoops and different elements. And they're really lovely. You can get lots of different things, like carpenters can make the wood, you put them together. But I guess even just the mounts, you can do decorative mounts with sort of pin lines. People can do like marbling on them.
Ooh.
Or V grooves. It can be more creative than people think.
I'm sure. What's the kind of most nerve-wracking part of framing, would you say? I mean, when someone comes in and they've got a specific design in mind or a specific idea about how they want it to look, is that a challenge for you, or is that a bit more nerve-wracking, or what kind of is easy peasy and what's a little bit more tricky, would you say?
I think sometimes the hard bits are having people's sort of valuable original pieces can
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Because obviously then you're having to sort of handle them with care as well, and you know, you don't want anything to go wrong. And obviously we make sure that, especially with customers, when they come in, you want to show them everything you're going to do for the process. You're going to handle it in front of them, show them what you're going to do and what materials you're going to use to protect that work.
Yes.
And preserve it, because that's what you're essentially doing, is you're preserving that piece of work in a frame.
Yeah.
But then also it's just making sure confidently that what you're choosing people also like, because at the end of the day, it's sort of a collaboration.
Of course
it is. You're
guiding
them and educating them on what works, but they've also got to love it, because it's got to be in their house or in their exhibition. So I suppose it's just having that relationship with the customer.
And it's all about communication, really, because, you know, if I were to sort of imagine something that I need framing, I would be very much a novice. And what I'd need is someone like you, Beanie, to sort of say to me, this is the guidance, Julie. This is what you need. But you don't want to be too heavy handed. You just want to be. And what I feel from you, what's coming across this morning on the radio, is that, you know, you're supportive and giving them suggestions and showing them exactly, as you say, what the potential is on a frame. So just changing the subject slightly, I wanted to find out how on earth you moved from the Cotswolds to Totnes. What crystal did you use to land here? Who was drawing you here?
I think it's the best decision I've made, because it's so lovely here.
Oh.
People are so friendly and everyone's so creative and just a lovely place to be. But I actually don't know why. We visited Totnes for 20 minutes, me and my other half, and we decided, actually, yeah, this is great. I'm getting a really good vibe. Let's just move here.
Wow.
And here we are now. So
that's amazing. Seriously. So you were here just 20 minutes, but where were you coming from, or where were you going to?
So I've got some family who live sort of near Totnes, but me and Tom had actually just got married, and we were going on a sort of mini honeymoon after the wedding.
Yeah.
And we just said, let's, explore this area a little bit more. So we just visited Totnes, went to a few places, Ashburton.
Yeah.
And just got a really good vibe and just felt really settled.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that really is. I don't think I've heard that story before of 20 minutes. I used to drag Martin here. In 2000, we came to Devon for the first time for a holiday together. And I used to drag him into Totnes, and he'd be like, oh, no, not Totnes again, please. More mung beans, etc. And actually, it was really a struggle to get him here. But now we actually live in Totnes. And as you say, the town is very vibrant, very, it's the hustle and bustle. It's friendly people. Do you actually live in Totnes
such
yourself?
An eclectic mix, isn't it? I think everyone fits in. My husband walks around barefooted sometimes, so he just fits in perfectly.
I shall look out for him. He's not alone in the barefoot brigade. Beanie, you absolutely have been amazing. First of all, you clearly are a can-do kind of gal, because this morning I was like, oh my God, there's no internet. And you're like, hotspot. And so we did that. So we're already following your instruction. You already have become our guru. And then, of course, my guest, sadly, is poorly today. And you just stepped into the breach. So thank you so much, Beanie. You are amazing. And I'm sure I'll be down there to discuss framing with you, because I want to see it all happening and see what you do. But thank you very much for being on Sound Art Radio this morning. We'll be podcasting this, so you'll be able to listen back. And just give a big up to Steve. Hello. Woo, woo. Okay, so I'll see you downstairs, but thank you so much for all your help. You've been brilliant. Thanks, Beanie. Take care.
Have a great day. Bye.
And you too. Bye. Beanie Murphy. She's marvellous. She really is marvellous. Seriously. I was having don't panic, Mrs. Mannering sort of moment. And Martin and Beanie just, and Steve, just sorted. Sorted, didn't they? Should we have a little bit of Billy? Do you like Billy? I love Billy Joel.
She stood on the tracks, waving her arms, leading me to that third rail shock. Quick as a wink, she chased her mind.
All for Lena and Billy Joel. If you just tuned in, this is 102.5 FM on Sound Art Radio. And we were just talking to Beanie. She's at Studio 4th Street. And that's 64th Street in Totnes. Working with Steve Fussell. Framer. Both framers extraordinaire, clearly. So thank you to Beanie for that. And they do all sorts of stuff, actually, downstairs. Framing and artist materials. Studio photography. Digital darkroom. And I can't pronounce that word. Printing. Art sales. Lots of fabulous art down there. Studio hire. Art tuition and life drawing. What more? It is just flooding with creativity down there. So do pop in and say hello to Beanie and Steve. and get everything that you need framed. I was thinking of framing myself. What do you think? Nah.
It wouldn't work, would it? No, no.
Bit of Kirsty, do you think? Are we ready for her? I think we're ready for those shoes. This is all courtesy of Martin. This is his playlist.
I once met a man with a sense of adventure. He was dressed to thrill wherever he went. He said, let's make love on a mountaintop, under the stars on a big hard rock. I said, in these shoes, I don't think so. Do it here. So I'm sitting at a bar in Guadalajara. In walks a guy with a faraway look in his eyes. He said, I've got a powerful horse outside. Climb on the back, I'll take you for a ride. I know a little place we can get there for the break of day. I said, in these shoes, no way, Jose. I said, honey, let's stay right here.
In These Shoes by Kirsty MacColl. Somehow you can completely imagine those shoes being really red high heels, can't you? Well, I can. That's what I see. So a big welcome back to Steve Nyer, who's flown in from Mauritius yesterday after 3 weeks. That's me kind of scratching at the wall because 3 weeks in Mauritius sounds absolutely fantastic. So, Steve, I hope you rested. I hope you had a fabulous time teaching people your tricks and your amazing insights into art. And the next song is a soapbox opera, Supertramp. And this is going out to all the artists in Totnes and all the framers.
Every man, every woman, every child. I say, but Father Washington, you're all mixed up, collecting sinners in an old tin cup. Well, spare a listen for a restless fool. There's something missing when I read your
Super trans. Absolutely brilliant music. Absolutely love it. Thank you, Super Tramp. So, yes, we're in Totnes, we're all sweltering, and I'm incredibly jealous of Tracy from the Barrel House going to see Marc Rebillet tonight in London with her daughter Sam. Have a fabulous evening, you two. Now, I have met a challenge that was presented to me this week by Martin. He said, you're going to the studio. Okay, you've got to write a monologue. So here it is. He was impossibly handsome, the man at the bus stop in Totnes. He had a guitar plonked on his back and looked across between, I don't know, Jim Carrey and Andre Previn. I always found Andre Previn very sexy. I don't know if that's Mia Farrow's fault or just plain animal magnetism. Have you seen him conducting? Oh, hot. Oh, mind you, Jim Carrey, he's a male befuddlement. I mean, sometimes he looks handsome and other times plain insane. Them funny eyes. The man at the bus stop in Totnes, you know, the impossibly handsome man as I called him, was looking for something in his guitar case. At first I thought he was going to take it out, you know, and strum, but there was a deep worry etched on his face, and I said, hey, lovey, do you need some bus fare? But he just looked at me as if I burped in his face with essence of Marmite. Disgusted he was, peeved. I mean, oh, I'd affected his manhood with my suggestion, so I sunk my face into my magazine. And then his phone rang, and I heard him speak. Oh, he was ever so posh, talking to Mummy. It was all, Ma,
I knew that you're Ma, yeah, I knew that.
And understood finally that he was looking for an address. So he'd scribbled down an address in Buckfastleigh, a B&B. Ooh, you can go off someone when they open their mouth, can't you? Suddenly, it wasn't André Previn at all, but Hugh Grant, and no longer Jim Carrey, but Michael Fassbender. Both quite sulky men in my estimation. Anyway, Mummy sorted him out and he went back to nail-biting, ignoring us Totnes folk. Well, Moira Shivel turned up. She was waiting in the queue. And I knew just where she was going, Ashburton. She always took the bus after her work in Totnes. She only does part-time at Seeds Vegetarian, serving up meals. I know her because she's friends with my neighbour, Peggy Lynch. I know a bit too much about Moira's life, truth be told. Stuff Peggy Lynch has told me about her. She should have kept it to herself. Oh, dear me. If only she knew the half of it. She always blanks me anyway. You'd think she'd never laid eyes on me before. I take it as a compliment. She must think I go for different looks. Or maybe she was jealous of the fact that I could afford to live in Totnes and didn't have to live further afield. Anyway, bus turned up, same driver as last week. What an ignoramus. He didn't even greet anyone, just wandered your bus card and take your seat. He was grumpy all the way to Buckfastleigh, but I didn't mind because I was going to the church. I love going to the Abbey. Every Wednesday, whatever's happening in my life, I have a date with God. I get biscuits over there too. Oh, custard slices and stuff. After my prayer session, I love a good prayer session, don't you? I usually collect a lot of intentions, you know, midweek, especially with our Barry living with me nowadays. Oh, what a headache. Barry is a lost cause and I wish he would pipe off, but I'm his mother and I'm duty bound to look after him and nutter until his wife decides to take him back again. She's a funny woman, pure Totnes, his partner. It's not green hair, it's blue, she's covered in tattoos. But you know, that girl, she's pure gold, she really is. She's worth her weight. She's a bit, no she's not. I have a lot of time for that girl. It's Barry I could swing for. He's really annoying. And I can see why she throws him out periodically. I mean, they love each other, but Barry has issues. I mean, funny ones. The type of issues they talk about on Radio 4 and Sandart. I mean, he's never been properly diagnosed or anything, but I know. Oh, boy, do I know. He's so stubborn. Oh, and lazy. He's never kept a job for more than 3 months. His last job was in sewage, which nobody gets sacked from, but he did. Taking stuff home, he was, to his lollipop lady wife, Stephanie. Stuff he could sell on the black market, no less. I felt so ashamed. He's in my intentions, don't you worry. Oh, don't ask me, because I don't understand sewage. Do you? He nearly got put behind bars. If it wasn't for Peggy next door, their son works at the sewage plant, and I were able to swing a few favours. Anyway, Barry sleeps most of the day. It's the night stuff that gets my goat. He flicks that telly switch 27 times without even asking me. And it's my home. He never sits down with me to eat and just brings chips in every night. He hates cooking. Well, he hates home cooking. He says the chips remind him of his wife, Steph. I wouldn't mind, but she's a very good cook. She's vegetarian. It's all beans and alfalfa. He swears if there's football, and I'll tell him I'm insistent. Don't swear, Barry, not in front of your mother. But he just snorts and lets off another So, yes, I have a lot of prayers to say. I don't pray for Moira Shivel, by the way. No way, she's a lost soul. Why would I waste my breath? Anyway, I'm at the bus stop at Buckfastleigh now. My prayer session was lovely and Father Molloy was so kind to me about Barry. He said he would offer him a job at the seminary. He was talking about Barry giving him a hand in the kitchen, but he doesn't realise. I mean, I couldn't bring myself to tell him that he's as daft as a brush, are Barry. I mean, seriously, a kitchen? No way. He doesn't even know how to wash a dish. He's like, you know, he loves carrying pipes, does our Barry. He'd work as a caretaker, maybe. Or anyway, Father Molloy will be able to get him something more suitable. I won't worry about him. 36 years of worry with that boy. Oh, I don't know. His father was a wrong un. No sooner had he had his wicked way and got me up the spout, he was off. He doesn't even know that Barry's alive. And Barry says to me from time to time, he says, Mum, let's see Dad's picture. I've got this lovely black and white snap out the cupboard and he gloats over it for ages and sometimes he falls asleep dreaming of him. I feel a bit bad because that's the photograph Father Molloy gave me of when he was a boy. I don't know to this day what possessed me to do that. I don't even know why Father Molloy gave me the picture. I mean, do you? Do you? Do you? I've had a great time with you today. This is Julie Mullen signing off. But I want to say special thanks to Beanie. Beanie Murphy, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And to Steve Fussell for being there, coming all the way to sort out things in the technical. Special thanks to Martin Seeger, thank you so much. And to Sarah Louise Connolly and Alistair Moffat. And that monologue was called Alfalfa and Stuff. See you next Monday. And I'll leave you with The Passions. I'm in love with a German film star. Come on then.